the vibe is so good that there's like a lot of really good raw material to work with if you could just like, if you could just get a little organized.
Hello, and welcome to the EuroWhat, episode 227, dropping on April 16th, 2024. We are a pair of Americans trying to make sense of the Eurovision Song Contest. I'm Ben Smith, and I'm here with my co-host, Mike McComb. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
In this episode, we'll be talking about our second group of songs from the second semifinal with our special guest, Mike Orgnetta. Hey, Mike.
Hello. It's very nice to be here.
It's very nice to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for inviting me.
We met at the taping of NPR's Ask Me Another roughly a decade ago. And
yeah, that's scary, but yes.
Oh, yeah, no. It was terrifying when I was digging through the emails. Like, how long ago was... Oh, no. At the time then, you were doing Idea Channel for YouTube, and now you have a new podcast, Never Post, which is a fantastic title.
Thank you.
It is about the internet. Do you want to explain what Never Post is, or what is the goal with Never Post?
Yeah, sure. Someone described it to me, so I don't want to take credit for this, as terminally online This American Life.
Yes.
So it's a podcast that's in segments. We do, depending upon how you count it, two or three segments an episode, and they're stories about the internet. And it is mostly related to stuff that the producers of the show have experienced and things that we're interested in. And the idea is that it's a podcast about the internet for the internet, for like people who already kind of have a sense of what's going on, don't need things like Twitter trending topics explained to them. So, for example, today's episode, we're recording this on March 27th. Today's episode came out this morning, and the two segments are, our producer, Georgia, worked with her friend, Luis, who is a professional audio producer, to develop this idea or this theory of why so much audio online sounds bad, seemingly on purpose, that there's a lot of internet memes that are really distorted, or like, you know, you watch TikTok videos and people are like really like just all up in the mic and it's the proximity effect is really strong. And, you know, like they are recording videos out in the wind. Like, why choose to do this when it's easy to figure out how to make good audio?
Oh, I'm getting hives.
Yes. Yeah, for us, we distorted a bunch of it on purpose,
yes,
to like make the point. And it really felt like playtime because we're all audio engineers that work on the show. So it was very much like getting, like almost having a food fight. And then the other segment is about this journal issue, the special journal issue that came out at the end of last year, that puts forward this idea that the Mega Dungeon, which is a setting from tabletop role-playing games, so like just this vast underground environment, is actually a pretty useful metaphor for trying to understand contemporary media, technology, and the internet. And so I talked to two of the Italian academics that put this journal issue together about that metaphor and why they think it works and what about it they think is fruitful. It's wild. It was fascinating to talk to them about it. And yeah, has kind of changed the way that I look at the internet, to be honest.
I am absolutely going to go check out the journal because like I was also just like, this is a really interesting framework.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And the journal is, it's academic. So, you know, there's citations. We're talking about philosophers. There's theorists in there. But it's readable. You can really like get a lot from it. And it's dense. Like there's a lot of really good stuff in there. So yeah, it's a 20-minute segment with them. We barely scratched the surface.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And it also sounds like catnip for a lot of listeners for this show.
You can find Never Post wherever you get your podcasts and at neverpo.st.
So how did you get introduced to Eurovision?
So I told these guys beforehand, I was like, I'm very excited to answer this question on tape. I'm going to say that it is not a massive exaggeration to say that the answer is this podcast. I have known what Eurovision is for a long time, just sort of ambiently. But the five songs that I listened to before coming on here, I think, if memory serves, are the first five Eurovision songs I have listened to, at least on purpose. here's the sum total of what I know about Eurovision, and you tell me what I get wrong. People sing songs. No. Artists who don't necessarily live in the country that they are representing in the tournament. Do you call it a tournament? Contest? Just contest?
It is a tournament. Like, I have joked with people that I host a sports podcast.
Okay. So people who don't necessarily live in the countries that they are representing in Eurovision write and record songs that are entered into the contest, and they all compete. Songs have to be fewer than 3 minutes. Is that true?
Yep.
Okay. I think that might be the most detailed piece of information that I know. And there are, from what I understand, like as of relatively recently, like two parts to it. There's the music video and the stage performance. And what I do not know, among many, many, many other things, is which my understanding or my assumption is that what you are judged on is the stage performance eventually. Like how you do live.
Yes.
Oh, that, wow. Okay.
Yeah. The music video piece of it, that is a relatively recent development. Having an official music video was added as part of the submission process.
Okay.
There was one time, this was back in 2013, where the video that was submitted initially was just somebody like on a Skype call, like singing their song into a microphone, be like, okay, here's the recording. We'll get you a real video later.
I mean, I respect it. Wait, okay. So is it not required that you have a music video?
It's required that there is some video created. It doesn't have to be like an MTV quality music video. Like that Skype video fulfilled that requirement. And if they didn't do a real music video after that,
that would have been
totally
fine.
Yeah. Or okay. Sometimes the official video is just the recording of the performance that they did during their national selection process or a previous audition. It's just something that they can throw onto YouTube. But the actual performance that is being judged by a jury and that people are voting on is the live performance that happens in May.
Okay, I promise I'm not going to ask you to explain the entirety of how this works to me. Because I purposefully had a moment in my kitchen earlier today where I was like, am I going to go read the Wikipedia entry for Eurovision? And I made the active decision not to. The national selection process, I imagine, is roughly what it sounds like. You have a bunch of people who do represent that country performing all at once, like in an event. That person is then selected to go on to the overall competition that is Eurovision.
Yes. And okay, it is in several different forms. Like there are some shows that are like a American Idol type program, other shows where it's like a 6-week series, some where it's just a one night event. There are festivals. Sometimes the broadcasters will just pick an artist and pick the song, and there is no competition piece of it, or at least no public facing competition piece.
Yeah, we'll just get like an alert that just like, hello, Armenia has selected. Here is their song.
They release the white smoke out of
exactly.
Yeah, and actually, like looking at the list of the songs that we're talking about today, it's a mixture of all of the different methods, and yeah, we've even got San Marino in there, which is a ride.
Yeah, just like any of us could have been the San Marino entrant if we had gone through the appropriate procedure.
Yes.
Hey, this is good to know if I need to make a career change.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Should we dive in head first?
Viisminus and Pulup have teamed up to be Estonia's representative with their song Nendest Narkotikumi Dest Eta Me Kul Midaki. So Viisminus are a hip-hop group that formed in 2015 and started making waves in the Estonian music scene in 2018. They have 5 number one singles so far and have been a part of the Baltic branch of Universal Music Group since 2019. Pulup are a new folk duo that formed in 2014. The instrument they are playing during the performance is called a talharpa, which has historical origins in both Estonia and Sweden. This year's entry, often shortened to simply Nendest, is written by the members of Viisminus, Kovr, Lancelot, Pevakor, and Poja Korda, and the duo Puloop, Marco Vesan and Ramo Tater. Last year, Estonia was represented by Alika and her song Bridges, which finished in 8th place. Estonia will perform in slot 13 after Belgium and before Italy's preview performance. Mike Rugnetta, what did you think of this one as your initial entry into Eurovision?
Yeah, I went in order, so this was the first one that I watched, and I thought, wow, if they're all like this, I could get into Eurovision.
Excellent.
I watched the music video first before I just sort of like sat down and like listened. And what I wrote down was sort of if the cast of The Matrix were gutter punks and this was a themed. Sort of if the cast of The Matrix were gutter punks themed Estonian folk music warehouse rave, which like.
I think that captures it.
Ticks a lot of boxes for me. My general opinion of this is that if you were to ask me to imagine what Eurovision is like and what the songs that are mostly played like in the Eurovision contest are like, I would have described something like this, which is something that is like pop music adjacent, has a lot of sort of national personality, and has a kind of folk music twinge from the place that it is representing. This is just really fun. I love the tall harpa generally. You get some older guys in a warehouse doing a tall harpa off. I think the vocal performances are compelling. You know, this isn't necessarily something that I would like listen to. Like I would not, I don't think, choose to listen to this, in my day-to-day life. But, like, I find the, like, hip-hop influence interesting and raises a lot of questions in the way that I'm sure a lot of the sort of cross-cultural stuff does in Eurovision. But it felt like they pulled it off. And the intersection with the more folk-style singing I thought was really nice and just altogether kind of worked for me.
I still really like this one. I've been a big fan of this one since it was released. Oh, goodness, was this back in December? Whenever the Estee Lal songs dropped. And this was the first one that I heard. And it was like, ooh, this is really going to work for me. It was what opened up their national selection process. I think it's a great opener. I really don't like that they are in the second half of the second semifinal. That is like the worst place for this song to be. Like, this should be kicking off the party, not be smack in the middle of it. I'm still really enthusiastic about this one. I don't think the overall Eurovision community is as enthusiastic as I would like them to be. I think they got lumped into the weird little dudes category that we've created this season. And I don't really think that I don't think they're weird enough to be weird little dudes. But and even in that grouping, I believe when Dude Poin was on, she put them in fourth weirdest dudistness, and mm-hmm. I think that's correct. But my concerns with the song are like going back to what the live performance was like at the semifinals and the grand final, where it was very messy. Like the adrenaline of the performance kind of took over, and the camera operators didn't really know where to look all of the time, and I don't think the guys could hear each other, so I think they were kind of stepping on their lyrics. Yeah, it was a bit of a hot mess, but it felt like something that could be fixed.
There's also some in the music video, like in the studio track, there's a fair amount of some vocal processing on a lot of the delivery that's like doing a lot to make it sit in a certain way. And yeah, the mix, I did notice, the mix in the live performance was weird. The vocal performances were like not as sharp.
And I think it's also going to be something that's tricky when you have six people who are like just like the mic setup of having six live mics operating and people kind of all over the stage. Like, I think this is going to be a real challenge for the audio engineers at Eurovision. But if they're successful in that, I think this could turn into a really good performance. But hopefully these guys are putting the work in to accomplish that, because if they're just going to kind of like, I don't know, not do their homework, not study for the tests the night before. Like, it could be, again, kind of a hot mess. But I'm hopeful for this one. I don't think I have the winner vibes from it that I had the last time that we talked about this one. But I still really like this track. I do seek it out. It's going to be part of my main playlist for a while.
I think the reason that we had Winter Vibes is because, like, it really feels like a couple years ago there was a Moldovan entry where Zobzi Dub, where they paired up with a new folk duo, and everybody in Turin was just like really on board with their song. And like, this has some of the same energy to me, but I'm really worried about the stage performances. Like, lock them in the studio and make them map out what they're going to do. Leave them some room for improvisation, but like, they need to be able to give the camera operators, here is where we're going to be. Please focus on this. Lyrically, the song is super fun and it's telling a story. Essentially, like, they're getting pulled over by the cops and just like, yeah, I don't know where these drugs came from. Part of the staging, like, goes all trippy and psychedelic, like, uh-oh, it's kicking in, and the camera just doesn't know where to go.
Could you describe briefly why that's important? Asking for a friend, me. It sounds like, I'm going to guess, so is part of the way you win Eurovision impressing people at home so that they vote for you on the internet?
Your scoring in Eurovision is two parts. Half of your points come from every nation sends a jury of five industry professionals of some sort who are evaluating the songs on like a list of criteria, ranking them, all that gets tabulated up, and they'll give their points out to the top 10 of those based on that. And then the other half comes from the televote, where you cannot vote for your own nation.
Oh.
But you can call in, and like, there's now an app for rest of the world where you can give like essentially up to 20 votes to the things you like. So you are trying to appeal to both a jury of music professionals of some sort who are evaluating sort of the artistic merits, but you also want to have something fun for the people at home who are watching, because ultimately it's a TV show.
And so if the camera is all over the place, can't follow the action, and it looks really messy, then everybody at home is just, they're going to have no idea what's going on. They're not going to vote for you.
Exactly. Right. And if your vocals are all over the place and the audio engineers in the arena don't know what to do, you're not going to sound your best.
Okay, that makes sense.
There's a lot going on under the hood of this one, even though it's very fun, and I just want all of that to shine. It's really grown on me. It is also like not in my regular playlist, but like when I watch the performance of this, I'm like, I want to see what they're going to do in the arena with this one, because they're at like a really weird spot in the lineup. It could really kick off, which would be fun.
The vibe is so good that there's like a lot of really good raw material to work with if you could just get a little organized.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that is one of the strengths of the song, where like you get the vibe, yeah, even if you do not speak Estonian, which I think is
really
going to
do.
Be a
yeah.
big mm-hmm. part of the audience. And it's like, oh, I know what this song is about. I want to be at that party. So
that was another thing that, well, we can talk about this as we go through the other stuff, but like, I now realize, like, should I have been slightly surprised that it was in Estonian?
Maybe. Like, okay. That's something that has been shifting the last several years at Eurovision. I want to say it was the 2017 contest. There were very few songs that were in a language other than English.
Whoa.
Like, you might have been able to count it on one hand. Funny enough, that year, a song in Portuguese ended up winning, and that kind of opened the door to, like, oh, non-English songs do actually stand a chance here. Yeah. Since then, a song in Italian has won, a song in Ukrainian has won. Finland had a song in Finnish last year, finished in second place. A lot of people thought it should have won, present company included.
Yes.
So like language has been expanding the last several years.
Got it.
So it's kind of a surprise in that I'm trying to remember the last, well, Estonia has been sending Estonian songs, but it's kind of a coin flip on whether or not their entry is going to be in Estonian or English.
Got it. Yeah, I think it sounds great. Like, it's just it's great to listen to. Yeah.
This one, and then again, Finland last year, both of those are Ugric languages, and there's just something very nice and percussive about them that works really well.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm rooting for them.
Anna Saba Olenschlager, who performs as Saba, will represent Denmark at Eurovision with the song Sand. Saba is a model and singer who made her musical theater debut in a production of Hair in 2023. She is also an ambassador for the Danish Depression Association and was featured in a documentary about her experience with bipolar disorder. Saba was selected via the process Dansk Melodi Grand Prix, where she opened the show. Three acts advanced to the DMGP Superfinal, where Saba was the clear favorite of the jury. She finished third in the televote, which led to some grumbling following her win, despite having a clear margin of victory. Sand is written by Jonas Thander, Melanie Vebbe, and Pil Kalinka Nygaard Jepsen. Vebbe has previously written Move, performed by the Mamas, which won Sweden's Melody Festivalen in 2020, and Love is Forever, performed by Leonora, which was Denmark's entry in 2019 and the last time the country made it to the Eurovision Grand Final. Last year's entry, Breaking My Heart, by Riley, opened the second semifinal but failed to qualify in 14th place. Denmark is in slot 7 between Austria and Armenia. So, Ben, what do you think of Sand?
It has something anthemic going for it. It's propulsive. It's well performed, but I don't find it the most interesting of the various kind of straightforward pop tracks. Like, it's somewhere between what won last year, so Loreen's Tattoo, and kind of what Denmark sent a decade ago when they won, so like Only Teardrops. Like, there's something kind of in the same anthemic, mid-tempo-y sort of a deal where, like, okay, this is sort of what people were in the mood for last year. I'm not sure it's going to do the same sort of business. Like, if there's some interesting visuals happening, I can see it getting through. I can also see it placing, like, 11th and, like, just missing the final.
There is a class of song that I call grocery store song.
That is Denmark's brand.
Yep.
Yeah, is it really? Okay. All right.
Yeah, we've heard Denmark entries at Walgreens and CVS here in Chicago.
No way. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Am I good at Eurovision? No. Yeah. It's like, it sounds like something my grocery store plays, like bump and dance music to try to get you to move around really quickly and like buy a bunch of stuff. And it just, it sounds to me like a song I would hear in the grocery store, which, like, that's not necessarily bad. But I think, to Ben's point, it's not very interesting. It doesn't really stand out. The performance is very capable. Describing it as anthemic is really nice. I think that's really spot on. However, I do think there is something slightly, maybe unintentionally comical about belting out the word sand. It's just like,
I keep
it's
thinking about Dune.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh man, I mean, the crossover event that they missed, it does all the things that you have to do in a kind of song like this. You know, it's got the distant pitch down vocals with the highs rolled off. Like, you got, like, you're making a grocery store song, you gotta have that in there. It's got like the big pop music chorus that you need in your song that you're performing on America's Got Talent or whatever. It feels really familiar, I think, is maybe what it all comes down to.
I'm just now mentally picturing it in like CVS Bangers 6 and just, yep, slots right in.
Fits right next to Celine Dion. Like, there it goes.
I agree with what both of you are saying. I still find myself really optimistic about this one. I think part of it is, I think this is a really good recalibration for Denmark because they have been struggling the last few years. Riley's performance last year, that was not a good live vocal at all. I don't know, Ben, you were in the room for that. maybe it was a little bit better, just didn't translate through TV.
Live, I think, like, just being in an arena which is not necessarily built for, like, music performance, like, it evens out all of the stuff that's maybe a little bit pitchy when you have, like, the dedicated feed.
Right. So last year, not a great live vocal. The year before, with Ready, that was just not the right mode for 2022. Führer Flom was fun, but 80s revivalism is a non-starter at Eurovision, it seems.
Really? That's surprising.
Yeah, but there have been so many songs that have, like, tried to capture that, and most of them have just kind of fallen flat. I think part of it is a lot of them also kind of lean on the garish pink and purple school photo backdrop line design.
Sure, sure, sure. The lasers, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, that aesthetic, it's a lot of look for 3 minutes on a high-def TV. I think Sand is, like, really radio-friendly, really grocery store-friendly. The live performance was good. It does need a zhuzh. There needs to be some form of movement that is not just coming from the camera panning from left to right or lights, like, swinging up and down. Like, I think there needs to be some human movement on that stage, or maybe animation in the background. I'm guessing there's going to be at least one hourglass that is going to appear sometime during that 3 minutes. But
yeah.
If Denmark doesn't qualify, I totally understand why, but I like the direction this song could take Denmark, I hope they follow that direction at least for one more year. Like, I think they are on the right track.
That's your ambivalence is reflected in the YouTube comments in the video that I watched of the live performance, which is like, you know, it feels split down the middle of people being like, this rules, they're going to clinch it, they're going to get it with this one. And then, you know, the other half of people being like, this is boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that played out in the results. Like, the jury, which is probably looking at it more as a song and a product and like the musical aspects of it, she won the jury. But then the televote was just like,
The televote, like, when it came down to like their final three songs, the televote wasn't exactly a three-way split, but it wasn't that far off.
Yeah. Of course, Denmark also didn't have much to choose from. But that's another story.
Looking that they are between Austria and Armenia, both of those are going to be high energy performances. So this is going to stick out, or just sort of be like a good palate cleanser between those. But it could just be just sort of 3 minutes of, okay, cool, we've cooled you down. Big thing again.
Can I ask another general question?
Yes.
Is Eurovision at this point mostly dance inflected pop music?
It'll vary from year to year. Like, there's usually a mixture of things that are more high energy with some ballads, some mid-tempo stuff. And, like, it's always interesting to see, like, what does well and how that impacts what happens in the next year. Because, like, you'll see, oh, this did well, maybe we should do something in that vein. Will that be successful or not? Yeah. It's interesting to see how nations respond to how a previous year's entries did well, because it'll sort of shift the balance of those.
Got it. I can imagine a situation where if you're thinking so much about the excitement level of the audience being the thing that determines getting that side of the vote, then they're kind of just basically an arms race to who's got the danciest vibe.
Nations who are in the semifinals will draw which semifinal they're in and which half they're in. And then the producers of the show, once everything has been selected, will then come in and go, okay, here's the running order we've selected so that there's like a good flow of the show, so that like if they know that somebody brought like a bunch of props for the stage, trying to structure where we put those in the lineup so that the stage crew, which generally only has like 90 seconds to get stuff in and out. It is insane to watch live.
Yeah, that's wild.
Oh, they do so much rehearsal because that way they can just nail the timings. Also, if things are going slow, they will just like cut over to the host over here in the green room to vamp for time.
Yeah, right.
But just sort of trying to make sure that we don't have all three of like the very prop heavy acts happening back to back to back for the sake of the stage crew. There's a bunch of up-tempo things in the mix, I think, because Finland sent something very idiosyncratic. Karja, who was Finland's entry last year, was kind of a weird little dude, and we're now seeing a bunch of nations go, oh, hey, we have those.
Mm.
Estonia's like, we have six of them. Here they all are.
Yeah, they're going to enter the weird little dude off with confidence.
It's not just Eurovision that's creating that trend. In the preparation for the 2020 contest, which didn't end up happening for reasons, so many of the entries had a sort of TikTok dance component to it, and all of the acts were like showing how to do the dance, and like it would have been probably insufferable by the time that May 2020 rolled around had things played out differently. But then in 2022, Spain's entry had this major dance break, which was amazing to watch. And then the following year, there were a lot of songs that were also like from pop girlies that had a dance break just kind of forced into the song. Those sort of trends are happening. And then like the speeding up of songs, which I guess is also another TikTok influence thing. Like Armenia's 2022 entry was just like your normal adult contemporary song, but it got a sped up version, and that ended up going viral on TikTok and various other platforms and ended up charting in the US.
That placed 20th in the Eurovision final. Rosalind, who performed that song, was opening for Ed Sheeran last summer across the U.S.
Okay, so Eurovision is responding largely to a lot of the same market forces that pop music in general is responding to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, the elements you identified with Estonia is like what I love to see at Eurovision, of just like, okay, what's happening in pop music right now, and how does the folk music traditions of whatever country distort that, refract it, reflect it, whatever. Like, how do you, like, what happens when those two things come together? Do we get a Reese's peanut butter cup?
Which is funny because, yeah, like, I watched the Estonian one, and then I thought, okay, I could get into this. And then I watched Sands, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you get in Estonia, sometimes you get sand.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Like, I'm learning a lot every minute here.
Yes. So, yeah. Just like sometimes nations just really want to make sand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get it. The spice must flow.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you still playing the game?
Actor, singer, and Drag Race Belgique judge Thomas Moustin, also known as Moustie, will represent Belgium with the song Before the Party's Over. As a recording artist, Moustie released his first single in 2014 and caught the attention of Belgian radio stations. In 2016, the D6 Bells Music Awards nominated him for several awards, including Revelation of the Year, which he won. Blanche, who represented Belgium in 2017 and finished fourth, also won the same award. Moustie was one of the first artists heard for the 2024 Eurovision season. The choir heard him before the party's over is actually constructed of fan submissions requested by Moustie, as the track was in the final stages of completion back in January. A similar technique was used in Iceland's 2021 entry, taking advantage of Eurovision's recent leniency on pre-recorded backing vocals. Before the Party's Over is written by Ariana D'Amato, Benoit Leclerc, Charlotte Clark, Lloyd Aloysius, Nina Samperpans, Pierre Dumoulin, and Thomas Moustin. Because of You, specifically because of its singer Gustav, allowed Belgium to finish in 7th place in Liverpool last year. Belgium will be in slot 12 between Georgia and Estonia.
I think this is going to be the jury winner. Every time I listen to it, like, I like it a little bit more. I think there's just a lot of interesting stuff happening in this one, and it feels kind of like the culmination of what Belgium has been doing the last several years. Like, I've been trying to figure out how to describe it, and I think I landed on queer-friendly brooding.
That is certainly a vibe, yeah.
Because of You last year, it was, like, very up-tempo, very positive, but there was a sadness to the underlying story of that song. But then this is also, like, kind of reminding me of, like, what Hooverphonic was sending the 2 years that they were competing, or, like, what Senek had in 2018, where it's just this kind of sort of Bond theme adjacent, but like a really powerful vocal on top of that. I don't want to say it's a relatable story because I'm not really sure what the story of the song is, but you can just sort of feel it in your bones. It's like, oh yeah, I get what you're talking about, even if I cannot articulate what it is that you're actually talking about. I am really fond of this one, and I think it's going to win the jury. I don't know if it's going to win overall, but winning the jury would definitely put that in a good position for that to be the case.
That's really interesting. I think that this is the one in this group that the most sort of highlights for me what is probably the gulf between what I am like hearing and listening and picking out and identifying as like different good and bad facets of the composition and what a jury is going to be looking for. I'm not really familiar really with what it is that they are trying to find. You know, it's like watching the Olympics, right? Like, you know, you can usually tell when something is really good, but sometimes there's just the judge that wanted something else and you don't know what it is. I think like the orchestration's really nice. The performance is really good. The simplicity of it is really effective from a production standpoint. Like, the mix is great. It does all the things that you're supposed to do. Again, in a song like this, it's got, just like Sand, the distant pitch down vocals with the highs rolled off. Like, you have to. It is required by law when you make this kind of song. I even thought that, like, the chorus thing is, like, kind of hokey to me, but it works. I think the drum programming is really nice. You know, you were saying that 80s revival doesn't really play. But to me, like, some of the drum programming and some of the drum sounds in here have a little bit of that 80s revival feel to them, which, you know, playing against the synth pads, I think is very, very effective. However, in listening to it, I can't not think about, I feel like I might be about to make some enemies here. And I want to say that this is like not from a place of disrespect. really made me think about something a friend of mine said about Jacob Collier a long time ago. Do you guys know Jacob Collier, the musician? He makes YouTube videos. It's okay. You're making...
Maybe?
Okay.
I may have seen his work.
It's all right. He makes like very good pop music, and he's got legions of fans around the world. He's really great. He's great at talking about creativity. His music is very, and this is what my friend said, competent. He's extremely competent. He knows his music theory. He knows what a song is supposed to do. He knows how to write orchestration that does it. It's competent, which in a way makes it kind of bland. And I think that's how I feel listening to this. There's a kind of bland competence to it. But I'm listening to it from a perspective of like, I'm a guy just listening to music. Mm-hmm. So if I try to imagine what maybe a jury is going to be looking for, then maybe competence is exactly what it is. And that, yeah, this is just going to get scored, you know, 5 stars across the board.
I think that the bland competence is a great way of describing it. Listening to some of Musti's other work, I was going into this song with very low expectations. So maybe my enthusiasm for this is just like, oh, this is actually like...
You did something. Yeah.
Yeah. You hit the bar. Great. Yeah. And it's like doing well with lower expectations. It's like, okay, maybe I'm grading on a curve or something. But but in terms of what has done well with juries in the past... Yeah, bland competence. Like I think of like Austria in 2018, where everybody was just kind of like, wait, why is this song winning the jury vote?
Like, yes. I feel like Tattoo kind of falls into the bland competence as well. So yeah, this is the sort of thing the jury loves.
To me, this is like a really good grocery store song.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would shop at that grocery store that plays this.
Yeah. Yeah, like on my end, have you guys seen the meme of like the drawing of the horse where like the back of the horse is done really well, like the artist just like really knows what they're doing, and like as you get towards the head of the horse, it's a stick drawing?
Yeah.
Just like when the horns kick in on this one and it gets into the Bond theme space, the sort of like lush orchestral bit at the end, I'm all in. I agree that the choral vocals are a little hokey, but like I'm on board by then. Heck yeah. Yeah, you've earned this. Okay, sure. The journey it takes to get there, I'm like, okay, come on. Let's get there. I think he's going to perform it well. I think it's going to get through to the final. And like, just because, again, like, it's worth noting, a couple years ago, the semifinals used to be half and half. And then a song got through purely on its jury points amidst a bunch of other controversy around the voting. So the last couple years, including this year, what gets out of the semifinals into the final is purely televote. Is purely just the viewers at home, what do they like? I think there's enough here for people to latch on to. If they throw all of the stuff at it, like just like at the pivotal moment of the chorus, just like unleash whatever the stage thing does, like that curtain of sparks. All of the big stage things that you can do, just like just really make that powerful moment powerful. I think it'll get through. I agree that I think it's going to do real well with the jury, but it could also be one of those ones where it does real well and it's sort of sitting at like sixth place and then like the televote comes in, it's like 20 points!
If he can nail the vocal performance, it's extremely satisfying.
Yes.
So like I could imagine from an audience perspective, really, like when you're thinking about what it is that you remember from what you've just seen, there's just enough sort of sparks and the intervals are impressive enough. And yeah, like it is, it's very satisfying, especially against the, you know, when it is a little bit more minimal compositionally.
Spanish rock band Megara won Una Voce per San Marino and will represent the most serene republic with the song 1111. The group formed in Madrid in 2015 and doesn't really care to be defined by any one genre, describing their sound as the perfect mix between the sinister and cotton candy. In 2023, Megara attempted to represent their home country Spain and finished fourth at Benidorm Fest. They tried to make a second go of it at this year's Benidorm, even referencing it in 1111's lyrics, but did not make the final cut. They had to take the long way through San Marino's process, going through auditions, the semifinals, and the second chance round to get a slot in the grand final. They closed the show and won the hearts of the jury. 1111 is written by Isra Dante Ramos Solomando, Roberto La Lueta, and Sarah Jimenez Morel. San Marino can only go up from last year's result, where Like an Animal by Peaked Jax tied for last place in the second semifinal with 0 points. San Marino will perform in slot 10 after Spain's preview and before Georgia. So, Mike, what do you think of San Marino's entry?
Before I say, man, 0 points, that must hurt. That must really sting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's different in the semifinals than in the grand final because they only announce the 10 acts that are going to advance and you find out the scores after everything is done okay. And they release all the results.
Okay.
In the grand final, you will know that you got 0 points specifically.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's rough.
They split the jury and the televote into separate vote counts so that theoretically we are reducing the chance that an act will finish the night with 0 points, and yet that has still happened.
Oh, that just must really sting. What I wrote down for this was that this was a perfectly serviceable late 2000s pop industrial track. I found this fun. I think it's fun. Some of the vocal acrobatics are really nice. It has a light kind of almost System of a Down feel to it here and there for like these very brief moments. The chorus really is just very generic, really just takes a turn. All the personality is in the verses. The chorus is kind of a bog standard, like rock industrial chorus. And I think they could have had more fun. You know, they could have leaned into it a little bit more. They could have gotten a little bit more creative with it because like it's there. The parts are there. They pull those tricks out in other places. The last 6 seconds of the song has more personality than, you know, most of the rest of it when they do this like very brief dubstep twinged coda. Like when that comes in, I'm like, what? Where was that the whole rest of the song? But I realize that probably like some portion of this is calculated because like I would guess a certain amount of your songwriting for Eurovision is you really want to have something that's hooky, that like isn't kind of like strange or challenging or whatever. You want to have something that's really just gets stuck in people's ears. But I think even by that measure, they sort of miss out on this one.
I agree that they seem fun and I love their energy. And like there's a lot of interesting stuff in the mix. The brief flamenco hand clapping.
Oh, so good.
Throwing that in like the stew with everything else that they're doing at the same time. Like it's just a really lovely detail. The chorus is weirdly generic and I don't notice it as much just when I'm watching the performances because like there's so much else going on of just like we now just have neon skeleton twins. There's so much happening. The official video for this is also so fun and is just really feels like it is them refusing to be placed in any box. I like this turn for San Marino. I think this is my favorite San Marinese entry in years. San Marino just seems to enjoy maximalism and rock and maximalism in particular.
Okay. Yeah, this is that. Yeah.
Yes, this is very much brand San Marino. I hope it's more successful than last year. And I think if they stage this in an engaging way, there's a lot to like hook you in.
I will send you the video of Achille Lauro's semifinal performance from 2 years ago just to see what San Marino has sent in the past, the very recent past. Because, that is what I was thinking of with this performance, just in terms of everything was happening. There was a mechanical bull. There was somebody dancing in a cage. There was leather pants everywhere. Like, there was everything. Like, you did not know where to look because there was so much stuff going on. This felt like a fully realized idea when it was presented on the San Marino stage. And I think that makes sense because if this was going to be part of Spain's Benidorm process, that happened about a month before San Marino. So they probably had everything already mapped out and were able to rehearse that and get everything ready to go versus somebody be like, oh, I found out on Friday I'm going to be in the final that is tomorrow. Okay, I guess I'll get a new strap for my guitar or something. Like, yeah, I think this had a real advantage going into the selection process. And I loved Megara's entry last year in Spain's process. They are someone that I've been keeping an eye on, and I'm so glad that they are finally getting to go to Eurovision. I think this is going to do better than San Marino's entry last year. Like, I don't think it is as objectionable as last year's entry was, even though I liked last year's entry. I am worried, though, that there is just going to be too much stuff on stage. I don't want to say lose the skeleton twins, but maybe have them be a little bit more organically part of the performance or brought out earlier.
Make a lot of sense.
No, they're just all of a sudden they were there after like a quick change. I'm just like, okay, sure.
Which is funny because the music video makes a lot of sense. Like, there's a very clear idea presented, but the live show sort of just looks like a white zombie show circa 1998.
Yeah, or something that like was pulled from like This Is Spinal Tap or something. It's like, oh, okay, well, we've got skeleton twins, let's use them. So the scale model of Stonehenge. My other concern about the band: at last year's Benidorm Fest, their grand final performance sounded really rough because I think they were enjoying all of the party atmosphere of Benidorm week. I'm hoping that they are just careful with their schedule during rehearsals week. Like, take it easy, not too easy. Save your voice for the live shows that count.
I always forget his name. The frontman of Disturbed has said like multiple times in interviews, he's like, being a vocalist is extremely difficult. You simply cannot party. You just cannot go to anything fun. You go to the show, you go to bed.
And that's the thing about Eurovision, is it is a marathon. The live show on Saturday, it's very rare to have a performance that does not suffer a little bit, just because it's just like these people are tired by the end of that 2-week period.
Yeah, there is the live show, but there have been at least two rehearsals for that live show. And if you were in the semifinal, there were at least two rehearsals there.
That anyone is still standing is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then there's like all of the fan engagement events, all of the press events, traveling, and just like kind of like being under everybody else's control for a 2-week period. It is grueling, and I really don't wish it on anybody, but it's so much fun. Any other thoughts on San Marino?
I just think they're neat.
Think they're neat. I agree with that.
They seem so much fun.
Yeah.
San Marino's process is deeply chaotic. They are the most serene republic, and somehow they have the most chaotic selection process. Because this is the one where, if you are interested, you basically just fill out the form and like go to the San Marinese DMV and like perform your song. And if they like you, cool, we'll see you in 2 weeks. And then like they go through a bunch of those. They have a bunch of artists they've invited. Everybody performs at a venue that is at like an outlet mall in San Marino. It's shown on TV, but there is no televote. It's just like the panel of their jury just is like, you win.
Someone gotta make a movie of this. I would watch this movie.
I want a documentary of just like Una Voce per San Marino 2025.
I want to meet the government bureaucrat that decides whether or not you get moved forward in the process. And I want to know what their stamp looks like.
I could probably track that down for you. I think I still have the link to their website.
So. They're not a big nation. It can't be hard to figure out.
Yeah.
I went to hell and back to find myself on track. I broke the code.
Nemo Mettler will be representing Switzerland with their song, The Code. They released their first EP, Clownfish, in 2015, but it was the single Do in 2017 that helped Nemo splash onto the scene. The song won Best Hit at the Swiss Music Awards, while Nemo won Best Male Solo Act, Best Breaking Act, and Best Live Act. Since then, Nemo has come out as non-binary. Nemo indicated in an interview in November that they prefer gender-neutral pronouns, except in German, where first name is preferred. Nemo is also revealed to be the panda on The Masked Singer Switzerland, where they finished fifth. Switzerland announced Nemo as their act alongside The Drop for the song. The Code is written by Benjamin Alasu, Lasse Midsian Neumann, Linda Dale, and Nemo Mettler. Last year, Switzerland finished in 20th place with the song Water Gun by Remo Forer. Switzerland is in slot 4, following Greece and preceding Czechia.
I like this, however...
I think we are going to see eye to eye on this. Okay.
Yeah. So from its initial drop, this is reminding me of something, and I cannot put my finger on what it is. this morning, my husband came home from the gym and he was just like, they were playing music over the, like, the gym speakers. And one of the songs they played was Macklemore's Can't Hold Us. And, like, the part where he says, like, blah, 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 Shark Week, like, sounds exactly like the rap portion in The Code. It's like, oh, that's it, sort of. It's not quite it. And then one of the things that's been kind of nagging me about this song is that it feels very Broadway and very theatrical, but not in a pop music sort of way. Recently on Blue Sky, somebody had posted the video of Neil Patrick Harris at the 2013 Tony Awards doing the bigger opening number. I'll put a clip of it in the show notes because it's a fantastic opening number. But like Neil Patrick Harris, Broadway energy is a very specific type of energy. And I think Nemo's energy is the exact same. Mm. Yeah. So it's just kind of like this NPH, Lin-Manuel Miranda showmanship that is being attached to this Macklemore-ish pop song.
Oh, God, I feel horrible.
But I still like it, yeah. Despite all of those caveats. And we are recording this before a live version is available. I think that is the part that I most need to see to form the final opinion on this one, because it is going to be a very challenging song to perform live and something that it could be very easy to lean on pre-recorded vocals to get to some of the more challenging layers of the song. But I'm encouraged by the fact that Nemo has previously won a Best Live Act award from a major award-giving body. So I'm hopeful, but at the same time, it's like, is this actually good? Or is this like Eurovision good? I don't know. Like, I have a very conflicted relationship with this song, but I'm thumbs up on it.
Thank you for identifying Neil Patrick Harris on this one, because, like, I find him exhausting.
Yes.
He was in the most recent series of the Doctor Who specials, and he is a very talented man, but he exhausts me. I like, there's so much going on in this one. We have opera, we have drum and bass, we have rap, everything everywhere all at once. But the video too is just like, there's a lot visually happening. I'm responding well to the maximalism, like, that there's a lot of maximalism happening at Eurovision this year, and it's nice. And like, similar to Megara, is refusing to be categorized. But also, how is this one going to work live? The types of vocals are very different ways of singing and just like shifting from one to the other.
So I have written down Fifth Element, Watsky, and I don't know if this is maybe not a broadly known act, the Parenthetical Girls. Do you know the Parenthetical Girls?
I do not know them, but I'm intrigued.
Extremely good. Highly recommend. Go listen to the Parenthetical Girls. This sort of vocal performance, very sort of virtuosic, but up against things that you would not normally think would go with this style of vocal performance. My feeling about this is, I don't know that, like, I want to hang out with Nemo. like in the same way that I can recognize Lin-Manuel Miranda's, which is a great pull for this, I think.
Mm-hmm, yeah, another real good pull.
I can recognize his talent. I don't think we could be pals. a lot of this is impressive, especially the vocal performances, the operatic stuff, the rap section is like, it's not mind blowing, right? We're not like at Busta Rhymes level, but it's harder than most people would be able to do. And it's, I imagine, more complex than when this kind of thing shows up in other Eurovision songs, but I'm assuming a lot. But it's not enough to carry it, because I think fundamentally a lot of the composition is actually really boring. The drum programming is really boring. Like, it has the most standard drum track pattern that I think you could possibly get. Like, it feels like a preset pattern. Mm-hmm. While everything moves around a lot and there's a lot of like cross-pollination of elements, there's a lot of mixing of styles, the switching back and forth is impressive. There are these moments of performance that are impressive, but they don't really all add up together to a whole that is more than the sum of its parts. It really feels like compositionally the idea was, how much can we get in here? And it kind of stopped there. Again, very, very capable, extremely competent, but just like exciting for the sake of excitement, it feels mm-hmm. like. But I mean, I feel the same way as Mike, like, but I, like, I'm not a thumbs down on it. I don't hate it.
I think like on my first listen of this one, when we chatted about it, I described it like being a skating program that's all quads. I recognize the elements here and that it's very difficult and they're doing them so well, but also I could have done with a little bit more artistry. It's okay. Lin-Manuel Miranda is just a real good, because like, I appreciate your talent, but also it is not for me.
There's a lot of earnestness there. But the more that we're talking about it and the high level of execution that's happening, it's reminding me a lot about the conversation we had about Grease's entry last year, particularly like my criticisms of that were just like, okay, this is a very talented musician. He's only 16 years old, but look at all of these different things that he can do. And yeah, it's like, okay, yeah, but the lyrics of the song and some of the vocal transitions are really annoying. And Grease did not end up qualifying last year. And I mean, I think there may have been some other elements in play there as well, but it is kind of the same sort of structural issue of like, look in the mirror, take off one thing and see if you still have something that works. And I think that could happen with this song. It's too late for that, but it could happen.
Yeah, there's like, it's almost like there's, I don't know, I have to listen to it again to know whether or not I really agree with what I'm about to say. Part of how I'm feeling about it, trying to remember it, is that it's like there's almost too much technique, both from a performance perspective and from a songwriting perspective. We are deploying the moves. Here's this move. And now here's this move. And we're doing this move. And you never see these moves together. And that's true, but they don't really feel motivated. I think I agree with that.
Yeah. Well, and like knowing Switzerland, they did like a writing camp, and they've done writing camps before. Like, this feels like the sort of song that like a bunch of songwriters go off to a writing camp and come back and just like want to flex.
Oh, that is fascinating. And that is absolutely what this is. Yeah, 1,000%.
Surprisingly, it's only 4 songwriters that are credited. So like of the ones that we've talked about today, certainly not as many as Belgium. Like, I feel like Switzerland and Belgium are in direct competition with one another.
I feel that. I see what you're saying there. Yeah, that feels right.
Yeah, like they're aiming for kind of the same element, but like Belgium is doing a lot with less.
The clarity of vision there is so much stronger. I don't listen to a lot of stuff sort of out of a sense of duty. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, so like, I mostly listen to things that I like either enjoy, know I'm going to enjoy, or like suspect that there's like a lot of evidence that I'm going to enjoy it. So it's really interesting to listen to things out of this sense of duty, because it's like, I mean, you know, because I'm going to be on a podcast and like, I want to have an interesting conversation with two people I like, but like, I imagine this extends out larger to Eurovision in general. Like, you're going to listen to these things because they're part of the competition and you are, you know, you're involved. And it's interesting how that does inspire a lot of feelings of very deep ambivalence, like literal, you know, like I really can feel two very distinct and seemingly opposing ways about a bunch of these things, which is fascinating. Like, I feel that way about a lot of movies that I watch, but it's rare that I feel that way about music, which like I'm usually pretty binary on.
With so much of pop music, I mean, you're not asked to rank or actually choose like yeah. between them. It's like, oh, I like both of these songs, they're both on my playlist. It's like, well, no, you have to decide because one of them yeah. needs to get more points than the other. It's like,
which one's better and why, and I need to know now.
Yeah, yeah, as if this is some sort of objective measuring process. Mike, thank you so much for joining us. I hope this was an enjoyable experience. I know this was a lot to throw your way.
It was a massive pleasure, and thank you infinitely for explaining Eurovision to me. I am leaving a changed man.
Happy to help.
Yeah, did you have any additional questions?
Like, I mean, I'm just going to, you know, maybe I'll send you a bullet list on the way out.
All right.
let me think whether or not there's anything that is like a massive mystery to me. While we've been talking, you have mentioned, I understand sort of in a vacuum what it means, but I would love to understand in detail what the 2 weeks that you keep discussing are. What happens over those 2 weeks?
2 weeks before the grand final, they'll start doing rehearsals.
Got it.
Each country will get two chances to rehearse on the stage in preparation for the shows. The first rehearsal is 30 minutes or 45 minutes and get a feel for the stage, make sure all the camera blocking is working, do a couple of run-throughs of the performance. Once your time is up, you are taken off the stage. You get to go to a booth and watch a video of the performances, see what's working, make notes to pass to the technical director, all of that. Go through vocal rehearsals with your team, do everything that you can to get ready for the shows. A few days later, they'll get their second rehearsal. That one is shorter. It's like 20 to 25 minutes. And that is enough time to get through probably three run-throughs of the performance. So making sure that all the props are in place, all the blocking is taken care of. You get another chance to watch video of that, pass on final notes. The week of Eurovision is where the dress rehearsals happen. So the Monday of Eurovision week, there's a dress rehearsal Monday morning and then another dress rehearsal that evening. That evening dress rehearsal in previous years was when the jury would vote on performances. So it was a dress rehearsal, but it did count.
It counted. Wow, that's high stress.
The Tuesday first dress rehearsal in the day is like the family show. So an opportunity for people to bring kids. It's an audience rehearsal. And then the live show is Tuesday night. And 10 countries will advance out of that semifinal to go to Saturday's show. Wednesday has the same structure as Monday for the second semifinal. Thursday, the family show at the start of the day. And then the live show Thursday night. 10 acts will advance from that. So there's 20 acts there. There are the automatic qualifiers from five countries that are big financial contributors to the contest, plus the country that is hosting the contest. So this year it'd be Sweden. Those six acts will join the 20 that qualified in the grand final. Friday morning is a dress rehearsal. Friday evening, that is a jury show. So the jury is voting on the performances that night. Saturday morning, there's another dress rehearsal performance. And then the Saturday show is the big live show. A lot of stuff packed in a very short amount of time.
So like when Ben was describing what was going on, I understood based upon our conversation at that point that like if you were performing, there was a lot that you would have to do in a short amount of time. But wow, it's a lot. It's like an insane amount. Like if you go far in the competition, that's like superhuman levels of performing. I mean, you're basically Taylor Swift at that point doing an arena show every night.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Well, and like on top of that, there is also generally like some sort of Eurovision village where like acts will go over and perform their song live because fans are in town. Various nations will band together. Like the Nordic nations always do like a nighttime party during that rehearsal week. How are you a person by the end of this if you do really well? Is just, I keep meaning to sit down and go, okay, so like if you're in one of those selection processes where like you had to perform your song a couple times there and then you get to Eurovision and you do really well, like how many times will you have performed your song in full by the end of it?
It's got to be like 30.
Oh, yeah, because there's also the live-to-tape performances, going to all of the pre-parties that happen in April. If they select early enough in the season, they may go to other national finals and be guest performers during the voting window and stuff. I have to imagine some of these artists are sick of their song.
It's insane because like before all of this, you were just some guy from Lithuania.
I can't, man. Like I toured as a musician very, very briefly a very long time ago. And like I would play, I was just playing an instrument and we would play maybe two shows a day. Maybe. Mm-hmm. But mostly it was like, you know, you go to a city, you play a thing, you finish, you know, go out, go to bed, wake up, do the show again the next night. Like, you know, you maybe twice in one day if you have to do another dress rehearsal or sound check or whatever. Wow, but like, you know, three or four times in a day over the course of, you know, over the course of multiple weeks. That's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. And then like you also have like all of the press engagements that are happening. After the first rehearsal, there's a 20-minute meet and greet with the fan press. And then after the second rehearsal, there's a more involved press conference with international media. And then if you qualify, there's a press conference after that. And then all of this stuff is being conducted in English. So if English is not your first language and it's not a language that you are comfortable with, that also adds
strain. Stress. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask one more question and then I'm going to stop because I could just, I don't want to keep you for like the entire evening.
Yeah.
how do these people get paid? Do they get paid for this?
That's a really good question.
Or are they paying?
It depends on the country. It depends on the delegation. It depends on like the broadcaster budgets. Like Lithuania, I know that they usually get some form of a stipend. And it is also part of the broadcaster budget. Like with Finland, like UMK, their national selection, that is part of their broadcasters programming. So it's built into that budget process. But like Romania's entry last year had to foot most of the bill himself, and it kind of showed on stage because he had nobody to bounce ideas off of. And so it was very much the first thought, best thought of a 19-year-old boy.
Oh, no.
So,
yeah. Good plots. No.
No. And it showed on stage. They were the ones that tied with San Marino at 0 points.
Oh, no.
So,
oh, yeah. Buddy. Oh, buddy.
Yeah. But as far as I know, there's no real financial regulation between X. So like a country like UK is going to have a better opportunity to fully finance an act versus Moldova or Bulgaria.
Yeah.
Like it could end up being much more grassroots.
Fascinating. Okay.
Yeah. That is actually a topic that we should maybe look into at some point.
Yeah. It's just like, where does the money for this come from?
I'll read that essay.
I can let you know when that off-season episode goes live.
Yes, please. Yes. Yeah, hell yeah.
But yes, is there anything that you'd like to plug or point our listeners to?
The two things that I spend most of my time doing that are interesting for other people to hear are NeverPost, our podcast about the internet, which you can find at neverpo.st and wherever you get podcasts. And I'm also the co-DM and sound designer of a tabletop role-playing AP podcast called Fun City, where we play this long ongoing Shadowrun game that takes place in New York City in the year 2102. It's like a big sort of neo-noir mystery. We've been playing it for a number of years, and the team is trying to solve this big sprawling mystery over future New York City. And it's really fun. And if you're into tabletop role-playing games, Fun City. Also, anywhere you get podcasts.
Awesome. And we will have links to all of that in our show notes. And I think my husband is really going to like that one. I think he's a big Shadowrun fan.
Yes. So. Oh, okay. There's not a lot of them. So, that's great.
All right. Well, thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having
us. And that's going to do it for this episode of the EuroWhat. Thanks for listening. The EuroWhat podcast is hosted by Ben Smith. That's me. And Mike McComb.
That's me. If you'd like to help support the show and access a ton of bonus content, head on over to patreon.com/EuroWhat.
Our full coverage of the 2024 Eurovision Song Contest can be found on our website at EuroWhat.com. You can also follow us on social media at EuroWhat.
Next time on the EuroWhat, Ned Raggett returns to help us close out Semifinal 2.
How are you a person by the end of this?